What is up, sports fans? Welcome back to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Kaz, joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great, JVZ. What's up, brother?
We almost lost sports again this week.
We did almost lose sports again this week.
It's weird framing it that way because it's obviously like it's stemming from something much more serious,
Without going into too much detail on the what everyone already knows, let's kind of just frame it in the sports mindset, right? So sports recently, in a lot of situations, has been a lot more outspoken across the board, right? We had the things that happened with NASCAR, the NBA players have taken a lot more opportunity to be more outspoken, as has the NFL players, and just kind of across the board. A lot more players have been taking opportunities to speak out about the social injustice stuff, especially in realms of like the NFL and the NBA, right? Because a lot of them have especially taken that moment of things from Colin Kaepernick doing something and you know, then kind of missing that moment. So people kind of don't want to have that thing where they feel like they didn't use their opportunity to speak out on something.
Yeah.
So that being said, where we got to was the Lions decided to cancel a practice.
Yeah. And this was after Jacob Blake was shot in Kenosha, Wisconsin. I think if you were to try to trace it back to figure out like who was the first team to kind of do anything, I think you would have to point to the Detroit Lions canceling their practice.
Yes.
And I think that occurred on this past Wednesday.
Yeah.
I might have the dates wrong, but that happened first. And then I think the next day, the Milwaukee Bucks Milwaukee is like, you know, 30 or 45 minutes away from Kenosha. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the Bucks have had their own issues with the Milwaukee police, with one of their players, Sterling Brown, getting arrested and tased. And then a whole big thing to come out of that. Yeah. That was before George Floyd. That was before everything flared up around the country. They've had their own issues with police brutality, and the NBA in particular has as well. If you trace it all the way back to Tabo Sefolosha getting his leg broken by the cops, it's a long history. But in this case, there were players speaking out about it, and like you said, a lot of players have spoken out in the past. There's been an upswell of activism, but I think people were kind of feeling like, okay, what has actually happened out of all this? What has actually resulted out of all this? Obviously, like awareness has increased, but at some point you have to move from awareness to action. And I feel like a lot of people were getting frustrated from that. And then Jacob Blake gets shot in the back 7 times. And it kind of seemed like it was a wake up call to everybody that like, okay, everything we've done so far doesn't change the fact that Black people are still getting shot by the cops. And so I think that caused everybody to have to take a moment. For George Hill in particular, I think he was doing interviews and he was like, what the fuck are we even doing here? Because I think Kyrie Irving took a lot of flack for this. He was one of the people that was suggesting like, hey, maybe we should not enter this bubble because that takes players away from using their voice around the country to speak out and kind of puts them all in one place and distracts everybody again with sports. And so I think it, at that moment, it, I think a lot of players felt like they were a distraction. And particularly George Hill, who basically showed up for the Bucks Magic game, which was an elimination game, showed up with the intention of just not playing that game. And then when his teammates found out, they decided that they weren't going to play either in solidarity with him, and in solidarity with Jacob Blake. And
so essentially
that kind of snowballed.
Yeah. So essentially kind of the Bucks deciding to not play was kind of the biggest crux in this thing, right? Because it kind of caused this ripple, right? So you have the Bucks who kind of in a sense decide to stand behind their teammate and not play, which puts them in a position where they're forfeiting a game, right? But it has to kind of be accepted that that forfeit is being taken, which is then where the Orlando Magic decide to take a stand as well, and they just decide that they're going to leave. They're not going to accept the Bucks forfeit, and they're going to leave, which now puts the earnest on the NBA, right? Which I think was a really weird welcoming of the rules to be really smart to put that earnest on them, which caused the NBA to delay that game, which caused, I think, all the games that night to end up being delayed and postponed.
It's kind of a weird situation because when the players met with each other later, which is also like the fact that they're in the bubble together means everybody can actually physically get into the same room and meet with each other and argue with each other. And like a lot of stuff was aired out during that meeting. Part of that was like some of the other teams getting mad at the Bucks because they didn't talk to anybody before they did this. And so some of the other teams thought that like, oh, that made him look bad. Cause at this point, everybody was scrambling. This was not an organized effort. This literally started with George Hill, doing something personal and then his teammates backing him on it without him really asking them to. And then everybody else trying to back the Bucks on this. Because like, could you imagine like how everybody would have reacted if the Orlando Magic had actually accepted the forfeit?
Yeah.
then they would have looked bad. And then after, you know, the next game, which I think was Rockets and Thunder, they decided not to play, in solidarity with the first game getting postponed. And then, you know, so then at that point, it's the only game left that night is the Lakers game, the Lakers Trailblazers game. And so if all the other games are not being played, you know, LeBron's game is not getting played, because he's, you know, the face of the NBA. So he has to, you know, stand with everybody as well. So I think there was a lot of behind the scenes talk about like what should have happened had this thing been actually planned and organized. But at the same time, it's like, you know, that this was a reactionary thing, and this was an emotional thing. So like, I don't know, like I didn't expect it to be any better handled than it actually was. And honestly, like, I don't think the Orlando Magic looked bad by being out on the court and not, you know, not really knowing what was going on with the Bucks when they just refused to show up. You know, at worst they had like an hour of their time wasted, but like, you know, it's, you know, these things aren't planned. So
and it's a bigger thing overall, right?
Yeah, it's a bigger thing overall. There are much more important things. So they were able to talk about that over several meetings, kind of overnight. All the games the next day were also canceled. So basically two days worth of games were canceled. They just kind of postponed them. And then it for a while it looked like, I think it looked like the Lakers and the Clippers were ready to just pack up and leave the bubble, period. which is a pretty big deal. So, I mean, with the Bucks, the Lakers and the Clippers being kind of the, you know, three championship contenders willing to kind of just, you know, kind of just throw up, throw it all away, throw this championship opportunity away for this protest. It kind of, it indicates like how important this really is to the players. They were ready to give it all up. But then they talked it out with each other and with all the other teams as well. And there are a lot of voices, both pro and con, to whether to continue playing or not.
Yeah.
And I think probably one of the most influential ones is Jaylen Brown, who has been influential throughout this entire process. But I think he said, like if you want to leave the bubble, do you want to leave just because you're tired of it and because you want to leave? Or if you're going to leave and you're leaving for social justice, do you have a plan? Or mm-hmm. are you leaving because you're just angry? So I think that's kind of what swayed most people within the bubble to actually like, okay, if either come up with a plan or stay and we can come up with a plan together. And so the latter is kind of what they ended up doing. They talked out a lot of stuff with each other. They consulted with their union head, with Michelle Roberts. And then also like they got the owners involved as well, because a big part of this was going to the owners and saying, hey, you guys have a lot of power. You guys have a lot of influence and a lot of connections and a lot of money. And we need to see more from you guys on this and not just solidarity, but like action as well. It was a very contentious couple days. Go ahead.
I think with that, right, we should also talk about how that ripple spilled over into a lot of other sports and a lot of other people making stands. I mean, the WNBA, I think, no matter what, has kind of a lot of these things, like you said, planned out. There's a lot of unification that is happening in the WNBA, and the players are using their platform in ways to definitely speak out.
You can always count on the WNBA to stand in solidarity with social justice.
A lot of the other things were a lot of tweets and things from other players in other sports. One of the ones that kind of stood out to me was Bubba Wallace, because obviously he has kind of become the representative of NASCAR to the people. And he very much kind of tried to have that pacing of, you know, hey, you know, we definitely believe in everything you're doing. I forget exactly what the tweet said, but it was something along the lines like, you know, we're still going to be racing. We're still going to be doing this, but like, we definitely stand with everyone else in what they're doing and why they're doing it and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, I as much clout as Bubba Wallace has, I don't think he could get all of NASCAR to just all of a sudden stop, you know?
Yeah. And for like a day or so, the NHL, it seemed like they weren't even really going to bother either. And then Evander Kane spoke out and, you know, he started calling other players and saying, hey, like we need to stand in solidarity with the NBA on this because the MLS did, Major League Baseball did, starting with the Milwaukee Brewers. Actually, like, you know, a very outspoken part of that was Josh Hader, of all people, who I think we had criticized in the past for racially insensitive remarks from his old Twitter account in the past. So I think you know, baseball following suit, especially baseball in Milwaukee following suit, and games getting canceled, especially with Jackie Robinson Day coming up, mm-hmm. which is a very important a very important annual day in baseball every season, but as a part of, you know, acknowledging baseball's history and its previously segregated past and you know, the integration that kind of started with Jackie Robinson. So I think all of that kind of happening all at the same time. It almost felt like it felt like sports was on pause for a couple days while everybody just had a chance to think about all this, which I think is that's basically what the players wanted. Sports was getting to be a distraction again, from the real issues, and then sports stopping for a second brought all the attention back to where it needed to go. As far as, you know, what the NBA players got from the owners, they issued a joint statement recently saying that there are three main things that number one, they're establishing a social justice coalition. That's just like a fund, not dissimilar to what the NFL has. But also we talked about some arenas taking the initiative or some teams taking the initiative and turning their arenas into voting locations.
Yeah.
Most notably, really, I think, good. The Hawks I know the Hawks did it, the Kings did it, and a couple other places that I can't remember off the top of my head did it. Now it's now as part of this negotiation with the owners, it is now they're doing every effort that they can to every team in the league, I guess maybe outside of Toronto, who's in Canada, every other team that and there's caveats to this. If the team has control over the arena, then they should try to turn their arena into a voting location. If they can't turn it into a voting location, then they turn it into like a sorting location or something that can help out with the election process. Unfortunately, this is just a thing for this year. This is something I personally would wish they would do for every year, like basically don't schedule games on election day. Every year on election day, this arena, you know, every NBA arena is available for a polling place. But I know they're probably not going to do that yet. But I mean, maybe this year it's kind of easy for them to do that because of COVID and because of the schedules being reshuffled. But it's something I wish they would do every year, because obviously this election is important, but every election from here on out is going to be important as well.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of the one thing I want people to keep a kind of in their minds. It's like, I don't want to get to a point where people feel like either they do or don't get what they want out of this election, and then kind of people just kind of go back to this norm of like, if they do get what they want, they don't pay attention to politics anymore. Like, I would love for people to have this level of care about politics that they do right now, like kind of almost all the time. Yeah. Like, and especially at your local levels, right? Because one of the things I've always said is like, knowing your local politician should mean so much more than knowing who's at the head of certain things, because those things normally don't affect you as much as your local policies do. And it's just kind of one of those things where I hope, DJ makes a great statement, like, follow your local representatives on Twitter, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you kind of find that place to be informed by those things. Like, I still don't know enough of the local representation here in the city that I live in, right? I know a few, because I've been trying to practice what I preach and those kind of things and following through, and I don't like any of them.
that's the thing that I learned, like, once I started, like, I turned into a city council meeting once because they were voting on something that I cared about. And it was like, holy shit, these people suck. And, like, and then it was just like, oh my God, which one of these guys is like represents my district? Like, what district am I in?
Yeah.
So I can figure out which one of these idiots represents me. And so I can make them not represent me in the next election. And so, yeah, it's, you know, if you want to learn more about Baltimore city politics, then watch The Wire. I learned a lot from that.
Yeah, it's not great. It's a lot of the same.
Yeah, like, it's not the same people, obviously.
At least three of our mayors have been arrested, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Two of them have been run out of town. I know that much.
Yeah, so it's, you know, and one of them just ran for president. So you learn a lot by just following, I mean, follow them, the politicians themselves, but also like learn who the local reporters are that you can trust and follow them too. Because it's nice when they get super excited about the sports that happen, but also because they're covering a lot of, covering and uncovering a lot of, stories that are important for your area that might not, hit national news, or they're the ones that get it first before national news picks up on the big scandal. They're usually small scandals that start by the hard work of your local reporters. So like, if you learn who they are and learn which ones you can trust, then you can, there, it's a surprising amount of stuff that you learn about just the stuff that happens within 10 miles of you.
All right. There's still so much more to kind of unpack with all the social justice stuff that is going on in sports, but we're going to save that stuff for kind of future episodes, and we're going to move on to the roundup for this week. So kind of one of the first things, and this was kind of a big surprise to me. I saw a lot of talk about this on Twitter, but there's kind of a big labor shakeup going on in the world of tennis right now.
Yep. I mean, we've been talking a lot about how athletes in general are starting to realize how powerful they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even like college athletes who like we think are kind of powerless. But if they work together collectively, then they're powerful. Tennis players, tennis is like a mostly individual sport. So you would kind of think of them as like independent contractors in a way. You don't have tennis teams. You kind of have the ATP, the Association of Tennis Professionals. I might have that completely wrong, but that's like the Men's Tennis Association. And then there's the WTA, which is like the Women's Tennis Association. So they organize all the tournaments, but I didn't realize that there was not kind of a separate tennis players union. There was just there was a council within the ATP that covered, you know, that had men's tennis players on that council. Novak Djokovic was the president of that council. He's since resigned from that council to become the head of the new Players Association, which is now 60 or 70 different tennis players that have all banded together to form their own independent union outside of that organization. So I think, you know, they wanted something independent and not so closely associated with the governing body that they're negotiating with. And I think overall they want kind of a greater share of Grand Slam revenues. So far is
what's being talked about, how the money is spreading out, which is, I kind of always like when these things come to light in a way, because I didn't have an understanding of the money disparity in tennis, you know, like I just figured it was there was a pot per tournament and whoever was number one won the most, and then you kind of trickled down from there, right? Like, I never thought about kind of any of the weird other things that that happen in sports or in tennis because I don't follow it so closely, right? So this is one of those things you don't think about it until it's brought to your attention this way.
Yeah, and I mean the players are, I think, compared to a lot of other sports, I think tennis is one of those sports where the players themselves are the most important part of it. Like you could just have two players and one of them set up a cell phone camera or something and they could just stream that thing to Twitch. And that on its own is 95% of the draw. The rest of it is, you know, ball boys, the
ref,
the umpire sitting up in the chair, the facilities people, not that they're not important, but the coaches aren't that important. It's just the players and it's just two people, the player on one side and the player on the other side. And they're the most important. So if the revenue split doesn't reflect how important that is, then maybe they need to negotiate so that it does. And one of the interesting things to come out of those negotiations usually is at least some sort of exposure of like what that revenue percentage is. Like these two high profile tennis players play each other and generate a bunch of attention and generate a bunch of money and advertising dollars and all that. How much of that do they get? And how much of that goes into the pockets of people that just sit there and just exist on a legacy basis. That's always something. I remember being absolutely shocked when I found out what the UFC revenue split was. Because I think the fighters get like 10% and that's ridiculous when everybody's tuning in to watch those two guys beat the shit out of each other. They should be getting more than 10%. Of the overall revenue. The NBA, you could argue 50-50 kind of makes sense because it's a big organizational effort, but so it's, you kind of have to weigh it differently for different sports, but you know, this is, it's now tennis's turn. Though the one thing I don't like about this organization so far is that it does not include any women. Women players. And so like, hopefully this is something that eventually will, but Andy Murray was very outspoken about not wanting to join this organization until it actually does start to, until the WTA members are on board as well.
Yeah.
So,
and those are those things that are going to take place, right? Because women's, I think tennis is one of those sports where it's about as equal on player popularity, right? Like women's tennis is just as popular as men's tennis is, maybe even more so.
I think, I think it's like the big names at the top might be more like, I know Naomi Osaka right now is when it comes to endorsements, I think she's making more money than everybody else in tennis is right now. And obviously we had Serena Williams and other big names in the past. But I think the revenue is a little bit different. And then the fact that the women play three sets where the men play five during Grand Slams, that's always a factor into this. So I think that there's always some hemming and hawing over all that. But yeah, I think popularity wise, Naomi Osaka right now is blowing everybody out of the water. So like her choosing to basically withdraw from the tournament in solidarity with all the other protests. I think she was in the semifinals of a tournament and she chose like, you know what, I'm done. I'm getting the fuck out of here. And that was a big deal because it's, you know, the most popular tennis player in the world choosing to not play for the rest of the tournament. And so I think she's a person that is obviously a very big draw. So if you're going to be talking about revenue revenue shares, I feel like a person like that should be included, and not just her, but all the other women in general, that are a part of, that are tennis players. So, so hopefully they fix that. Hopefully this isn't just a cash grab so that the men can get a bigger revenue share of Grand Slams. This is, something that needs to involve everybody.
All right. From there, let's talk a little bit about baseball and baseball's playoff plans. So baseball has announced that they will also be doing a bubble for the playoff portion of their season.
Yeah, I guess several bubbles, I guess. Mm-hmm. This was announced by Jeff Passan on Pat McAfee's show, which I guess good for Pat McAfee now that news is breaking on his show. But Houston and Arlington are going to be the cities for the National League bubble. Mm-hmm. And L.A. and San Diego are going to be the cities for the American League bubble.
Okay.
Which is, I think, kind of weird because Houston and Arlington are where the Houston Astros and Texas Rangers play. And I think both of those are American League teams. So they're putting the National League bubble there is kind of weird. There's quick travel between the two, but
yeah, I was thinking VZ is that because they're both Houston and Arlington, and that in the case when it comes to the World Series, neither team, American League nor National League, will have to travel very far between the two of them. And playoff teams really won't have to travel very far. So that's the thing that makes the most sense to me with those selections.
Yeah. Eventually they'll have to combine these into one spot. But it's just weird that, like, to me, you would think the American League would get the Houston-Arlington bubble and then the National League would get the LA San Diego bubble because the Dodgers and the Padres are in the National League. The only chance of anybody having a home team in the bubble would be if the Angels make the playoffs, which they just keep backsliding. I just keep watching their record thinking like, oh, maybe this is the year that we'll get to see Mike Trout in the playoffs, but no, they just keep losing and they just keep getting further and further away.
Real quick, boys, that point about the Angels and Mike Trout, are the Angels cursed because of Mike Trout? Are they cursed?
No, they're cursed because of Albert Pujols and his massive contract. But then again, they're a team in LA. They should not be cursed because of finances, period. But they can use that as an excuse for now. Once his contract comes off the books, I think after either this season or next season, I think they'll maybe start building pieces. They got Mike Trout for like another 10 years, so they can. and they've got Shohei Ohtani and a lot of other guys that we like. So, they can start putting the pieces of when they don't have to put Albert Pujols on there because they're paying him so much money, even though he's not playing as well as he used to. So I blame him. That's his contract ends in 2022. So, he was basically a mistake as soon as they signed him. He was never the same player as he was with the Cardinals. There's a Foolish Baseball video about this, but he is one of the slowest people on the base paths, period. It takes him like 5 seconds to get from home plate to first base. And if he is hitting decent ground balls, he's getting thrown out. So it's bad. He shouldn't be out there. But he is. because he's making a lot of money and they're paying him a lot of money. And these contracts are guaranteed, so they can't really get out of it. But then they can't pay him that much money and just keep him on the bench. So, yeah, that's where the Angels are. They can fill out the rest of their team if they wanted to spend some money, but they don't. So too bad.
All right. So, from baseball, let's talk about a little bit of sad news. Cloud9, one of the kind of bigger teams in the League of Legends season, especially coming off of how well they did last season, are going to be missing Worlds this year.
Yeah, the last time I mentioned them on this show, I was talking about how they are so far away, so far ahead of everybody else, that they're making the sport boring because they're just kicking the shit out of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then they proceeded to lose about half their remaining games for the rest of the season.
The word you're looking for is throw.
They threw it, and then they got to the playoffs and then blew their first playoff series.
No, they threw that too. They threw that too. Very specifically, I know it was a throw because they lost to TSM. And that should not happen.
And well, no, they lost to FlyQuest, I think. And then
They lost to FlyQuest, but yesterday.
Yeah, and then they were eliminated from contention because that put them in the losers bracket, mm-hmm. of the of their double elimination playoff. And and then they lost to TSM in what was essentially the third or fourth place match. Yeah, so now they finished fourth, which then puts them, only the top three teams in the summer split make it to the World Championship. So after spending basically, I think they, like, in their first 32 matches this season, they had only lost two, and now that team misses out on the World Championship because they were so terrible during the second half of the second split of the season. So it's disappointing. I understand why they changed the qualification rules, because they don't want a team that is like this, that is playing so poorly at the end of the season, going into the World Championship and representing the region poorly, like has happened in the past. You have to be hot going into the world. It's better to have a team that's hot going into the World Championship than a team that's going cold going into the World Championship. So, after being so far ahead of everybody else, it seems like everybody else caught up. Either everybody else caught up, which is encouraging for the North American region, or Cloud9 just got terrible, which is not encouraging for everybody else. But disappointing. After all the hype, we gave them, just disappointing. And normally this is a team that will make the World Championship and represent the region well, whereas most of the other North American teams have been disappointing. So this is, so Cloud9 not being in the World Championship is on its own is kind of weird, but them not being in after having such a good start to the season is even more disappointing. So Speaking of disappointing, let's move on to the Washington football team. There are more allegations, more sexual harassment allegations published by the Washington Post since the last ones. This time it's centered around some of the photo shoots and that have been previously reported on in the past, but apparently there are some more illicit cuts of that photo shoot that were taken. At least the accusation is that there were some special edition cuts of that of those photo shoots that were more lewd than before, that were made specifically for Daniel Snyder, or at least the people that were cutting these were told that they were making these specifically for Daniel Snyder. This is an allegation that Snyder denies, but still not a good look, and the NFL is pissed off. I think if there's any way possible, they are going to try to find a way to take this team away from Daniel Snyder if they can. There's like investigations involved. It's going to be an even bigger mess. On top of that, Ron Rivera has cancer. Things have not been going so well for the Washington football team just in general. And this is just more fuel to the fire. Basically, the only thing good happening there is Alex Smith is back on the practice field, and he is looking pretty decent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
All right. Yeah. So let's move on from that. Let's talk a little bit about basketball to round out the roundup. So the Eastern semifinals is set. We're going to have the Bucks versus the Heat, the Celtics versus the Raptors. And then going from there, the Lakers have eliminated the Blazers. I checked out a couple of these games. The Blazers were playing pretty well, and I kind of wanted to see them do a lot better.
The injuries just kind of caught up with them. I mean, yeah. CJ McCollum is playing basically with a broken back. And Damian Lillard's had to leave the bubble to deal with another injury. So it was a valiant effort on their part to work their way into the playoffs. And then I think they gave a valiant effort against the Lakers, but yeah, there's too much talent on that Lakers team to overcome, and especially with injuries. So they tried. Basically the entire bubble structure was kind of set up to hem and haw over who was going to get the eighth seed, only to just have the eighth seed get eliminated by the one seed. But they earned their way in, and that process of watching them earn their way in was extremely entertaining. So we'll always have that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All the other first round series in the West are still going right now. So, the West is going to beat each other up. We talked about it last week. These top teams in the East are probably going to beat each other up as well. I think the Celtics are right in the middle of destroying the Raptors as we speak. So, which kind of is a bit of a surprise.
No, that definitely is. Like, I pretty much had this set in my mind as coming down to the Raptors and the Bucks. No disrespect to the Heat, no disrespect to the Celtics, but I just feel like those two teams are better well built. But yeah, according to the kind of the tickers that I've been looking at throughout the day, the Celtics are just out there balling. They're putting on a really good game versus the Raptors. But I still kind of feel like at the end of the day, it's going to be the Raptors that went out. And I really, as like, I like a lot of what the Heat is kind of doing with their current roster, but I think it's going to be the Bucks.
All these teams are likable. And the Celtics are, I was not expecting them to destroy the 76ers in four games, but they did. And I don't think a lot of other people were expecting that either. That's probably why Brett Brown got fired. Coach Brett Brown got fired. Nate McMillan, coach of the Indiana Pacers, was also fired. So on that note with Brett Brown, and the Philadelphia 76ers, that now leads us into kind of one of the bigger stories / talking points / discussion subjects from last weekend. We had actually kind of talked about it immediately after the last show we recorded. We were a little too tired because I was exhausted from ranting about the Kings, but by the way, Luka Doncic hitting that buzzer beater three immediately after us recording that show, that was just icing on the cake. I had to take a nap after that. I just did not want to deal with the world and deal with Twitter or anything else after that. It was just like, that was just, it couldn't have encapsulated the situation anymore. And just the fact that I can't enjoy an amazing player doing something amazing because I can't not picture him doing that in a Kings jersey. And they had that chance. They got lucky in the lottery and they didn't capitalize on it. But one team that at least tried to capitalize on lottery luck a little bit was the Philadelphia 76ers. And they tried to maximize the odds in their direction. If you've heard us use the term trust the process on this show, the process was kind of the name assigned to their strategy over the course of, I want to say 5 seasons or so. And so now the question with them exiting the playoffs in the first round, getting swept by the Boston Celtics, I think this caused everybody to ask the question, is the process over? And what did it even work? What really was it? Did they even get anything out of this?
Yeah.
I'll link a couple articles in the show notes that are kind of opposing viewpoints on this. One of them saying the process is over and it's terrible and it failed. Not only did it failed twice. It failed Joel Embiid. It failed the city of Philadelphia, this and that. And then another one saying this particular failure doesn't mean the process itself didn't work.
Yeah. I kind of want to frame this, cause there's a lot of good questions, that you have here in our show doc. And I kind of want to pose a few of them to us and then kind of go over some of the actual fact things that are in here. So I'm going to go through these real quick and then we'll talk about them. So obviously what was the process? We know what it was. It was kind of a systemic tanking, an acquisition flip of what the current roster was at the time, buying and selling, high, buying low, selling high, and losing games, so that you could get more propositions through draft and through free agency and other things.
And I think the roster they started with when this is kind of starting the 2012-2013 season. They did not have a lot to work with on the roster when Sam Hinkie took over the management of the team. I think they had like Andrew Bynum still on the roster back when he was like on the really bad tail end of his career.
Yeah,
I think the only real asset they had is Drew Holiday. And also like, I'm going to be talking about players like they're objects, because referring to them as assets and resources and whatnot. Yeah. And I mean, they're people, but the way the 76ers treated them, it definitely seemed like they were treating them like objects and commodities to be traded.
To a certain extent, you have to, right? You're trying to make a lot of moves throughout the larger league to get to a place where you have marketability and marketability through people, right? So a lot of these people are going to kind of come and go, and you know that. Yeah.
This is where they tell you it's just business.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, it was, right? You knew that what they were like, it became very clear very quickly what they were trying to do, right? They were very much working on a long-tailed process of being bad for a number of years so that he can be good. And I think this is where people get lost, right? Not right away, but for a number of years, right? They wanted to be, they wanted to put themselves in a position to be good for a number of years.
If you want.
And that's where I'm going to end up on one end of this, and we'll see where kind of everybody on the show ends up. So kind of let's move to the next thing as we get into this.
So I guess first, like you said, you've kind of described the process a little bit. The tanking is the hallmark. That's what everybody remembers.
Yes.
Is like 5 years of tanking. But during those 5 years, there was also a lot of flipping. Like, you know, they and also like they would draft guys that wouldn't necessarily be ready to play that year. Like they drafted Nerlens Noel and I think he wasn't going to be able to play all year. Joel Embiid didn't play for like 2 years. Ben Simmons sat out a year, and they were totally okay with that because that just meant that the team was going to continue to suck. They drafted guys like Michael Carter Williams, who won Rookie of the Year his rookie year with the 76ers, and then they immediately traded him because he couldn't shoot. So they saw a ceiling there, and they decided
Simmons can't shoot either, but whatever.
Well, okay, yeah, we'll get into that. But Michael Carter Williams, they basically saw, okay, this guy is not a superstar long term. He's Rookie of the Year now, and that means this is the highest his value is ever going to be. So flip him now, and get some other draft picks in return while we can, and so they did that with guys like Michael Carter Williams. They did that. They eventually did that with Nerlens Noel, even though he was a pretty good shot blocker. They did it with Jahlil Okafor. They did it with Dario Saric, who I think was a Rookie of the Year contender at one point. All these guys that they drafted, if they showed a little bit of promise, but not superstar level promise, they flipped them for, you know, either more draft picks or, you know, but basically that the idea being, and that'll kind of get us to our second part. Why do this? It's just because individual superstars are really, really important in the NBA. There's only five guys on the court. So, you know, and all these championship teams are built with superstars at, you know, two or three positions out of those five. And
VZ,
what's up?
I think for me, this is where I see a hole in the entire process, because yes, the NBA is a league where superstars drive success. But one thing about championship level teams is that general managers, front offices, they have a knack for knowing how to construct an NBA roster around those superstars to aid to their talents. And I think that is where the one thing that I think Philadelphia completely botched what they were trying to do. They were continually trading assets and getting more assets and trading assets and dumping assets off for nothing, that they were always trying to find the next chance to get a superstar and the next chance to get a superstar, but they never really successfully constructed an entire team around Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I honestly thought that the Dario Saric, Michael Covington team around Embiid and Simmons had a ton of potential, because if you look at a team like the Golden State Warriors, they were constructed around Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. You had two guys who were both super awesome shooters, but you didn't really have much inside. And the Warriors built their dynasty around the Splash Brothers. And you never really saw Philadelphia trying to do that. They didn't build around Simmons and Embiid. They just tried finding another superstar make a big three, and it just didn't work, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's actually, like, I put together a list of people that they traded away, and it's a pretty big, it's a pretty substantial list. But like to back up and go into like why did they kind of go with the superstar bust mindset? I think they just wanted to increase, because the draft is such a crapshoot. Like, I think they felt like they could increase the likelihood of finding more superstars if they could just get more picks. So even if, you know, yeah, so they trade a guy like Michael Carter Williams and then they'll get three picks, you know, a couple of them high in return for him. And then, so maybe if they hit on one of them, then it was worth it to trade this guy away. But also at that point, you've traded away a useful player and for just a chance at that point. And so, I mean, yeah, it was a lot of asset flipping. They ripped off the Kings in one trade. I think they felt like they had such a bare cupboard when Sam Hinkie took over that the only way they were going to pull themselves out of the gutter was to just build a contender through the draft. And the best way they felt to do that was to just stockpile picks. And just, if you have assets, flip them for picks.
Here's where I kind of almost start to lose hope in the process. Right. I think, one thing you have to do is you have to kind of come into it. And they were able to get a lot of picks. And luckily for them, I think they did get picks that had good draft classes. But there were also picks that had kind of mediocre draft classes. And I think in those situations, in their asset flipping, what they should have been doing was matching value for potential, right? If there isn't enough potential in a draft class, you try to match the value of the highest proposition you could get in that draft class in an already established player, I think. And I think that's where I kind of started to get worried about it, because I think they held on to these high value draft picks in weak draft classes when they could have got good player value out of trading those draft picks away for a second, third year player. You know what I mean? Yeah.
The problem is when you trade for those guys and they're good players, then you start winning games. And
true.
And they didn't want to start winning games because that ruined the value of their own draft picks.
Right.
So,
but if you're, I feel like if you're acquiring players that help you win games around your top picks that seem to be panning out, isn't that what you want to start developing? Right. Because yeah, I feel like the biggest mistake that they made is that they didn't allow these teams to develop when they actually started winning. It felt like every time, it felt like the Sixers were building something that might become something like a championship level team, they traded an asset. Yeah. Like, I remember when, in VZ, I know you remember this, when the Sixers traded Michael Covington, and you saw how NBA fans Robert Covington. And you saw how fans reacted to it. Same with Dario Saric.
I think they were in the same trade. They got Jimmy Butler for that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And
they were trying to get another superstar.
Yeah. I think the thing there is those are amazing. Those guys are good, right? But I think you got good value in Jimmy Butler, but then you run into a personality issue, right? You run into Jimmy Butler, who has his own plans, right? He wants to be the face of a franchise. He doesn't want to be in the list of face of the franchise, right? He doesn't want to be another guy on the roster. He wants to be the guy on the roster. And I think that is also a problem, right? You start to go for these high value, high market guys when you probably should have kept these other guys who are just good ball players.
Yeah. And so, like, I think we're getting a little bit mixed in the timeline here. So, maybe I should skip to the end, because I think we're that there's like the Sam Hinkie era process. Yes. And that's when all the tanking was happening. And then at some point, the league caught on, everybody else caught on, and everybody's watching this experiment unfold. And I think the gears in the league's mind were, it's not, I think at this point they're afraid that it's actually working. Because if this is working, that means tanking is a viable strategy. And if tanking is a viable strategy, the teams are going to start doing this. I mean, not just tanking for like a year or so, but like tanking for 5 years straight. And mm-hmm. if teams start doing that, that is going to have a huge effect on how watchable the NBA product is. If you have several teams that are just deciding, you know what, we're just going to suck for the next 5 years. Don't even bother buying tickets. Don't bother watching us on TV. Like, just the next 5 years, we're just throwing those years away. So that is something that I think the league was very much afraid of. It's they're not necessarily scared because it's going to affect the team, or they're not scared that it's going to hurt the team. They're scared that it's actually going to work. So at some point, Adam Silver kind of put the pressure on the 76ers. They hired Jerry Colangelo to be their, some executive. And then he brought in his son, Brian Colangelo, to also be a part of that front office. And then shortly after that, Sam Hinkie quit, famously with a 9-page resignation letter that if you want to read, you might pull your hair out while you try to read it, because it's so self-absorbed. The guy obviously thought he had stumbled on something big and that he was the smartest motherfucker to ever walk the planet. But if you can get past that, you can kind of see what his point was, that, you know, in order to try to achieve greatness, you have to do something a little bit off the wall sometimes, which may be true, maybe not. But I mean, the guy certainly went all in on what he thought was the optimal strategy that everybody else hadn't caught on to yet. So now the architect of the process is gone. He's been replaced by Brian Colangelo.
And that's part of an issue too, right? Is you know, no matter what you think of this guy, you have somebody who has this plan that they want to see out. They don't get to see it out, right? Yeah. So now you have somebody who's taking over in the late stages of this plan and is maybe not on board with the direction that it was going, maybe doesn't know all the steps, maybe
specifically
doesn't...
because he wasn't on board
right with
it. And so, like, in a way, the debate almost ends right there of did the process work or not. It's because it's like, you can always make the argument that the process was aborted and that it was never allowed to reach its full extent. And I think, you know, one of these articles that I linked kind of said that, like, if you want to limit, quote unquote, the process to just those Sam Hinkie years, you could argue that he was very effective in what he did, which was trying to acquire assets. He did a great job of that. But the way the 76ers, what they did with those assets once he was gone, should not affect whether the process worked or not. But it's all nitpicking, but it's, sometimes the argument ends there, or sometimes people want to argue end the argument there. But obviously, there's more stuff that happened beyond that. Brian Colangelo got forced out because of the burner phone scandal, which we talked about from it might have been last year or 2 years ago, I think, in the middle of the playoffs. He was caught creating burner accounts on Twitter to talk shit about his team. I think his wife took the fall for that.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, and So if you remember back to that scandal, this is the same goddamn team. This is the guy that took over for Sam Hinkie, the guy that was basically brought in by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver to run this team so that they would stop tanking. So at this point, they've migrated from tanking. Joel Embiid is now turned into a good, tremendous young player. He's embraced the nickname, the process. He calls himself the process at this point. Ben Simmons is now no longer just a guy who's injured for 2 years. He's actually playing, and he's turning into a good player as well.
When he can drive the ball.
Yeah, and then they've got other prospects as well that they're trading. But, you know, at this point, they're trying to make the transition from just a team with a lot of promising young talent to a good contending team.
Yeah.
So that's when they make all these trades for like Dario Saric and Robert Covington for Jimmy Butler. And then they bring in guys like JJ Redick. I think they traded for Tobias Harris as well. Mm-hmm. They're bringing in kind of good to great players from around the league and taking all these assets that they've stockpiled. And now instead of flipping them for more draft picks, they're actually flipping them into players and flipping them into good players to try to build a contender. I think their last kind of major draft pick acquisition move was to try to trade up to the number one overall pick and draft Markelle Fultz, which we talked at length about him getting what we thought were the yips and forgetting how to shoot the ball completely. But it turns out their training staff misdiagnosed a shoulder injury. So that whole thing got botched. He got traded to Orlando. That basically wasted the number one overall pick, which they had to trade more picks to jump up from number three to number one. Meanwhile, Jason Tatum, the guy that got picked at number three by the Celtics, is doing great things for the Celtics right now, including eliminating the 76ers from the playoffs in the first round. So, so that's a pretty big black eye. Brian Colangelo got forced out. His replacement is Elton Brand, who was the GM of their G League team. I talked for like an hour last week about the importance of finding an experienced general manager candidate out there. There are guys that have been working for 10 years for 29 other teams out there as assistant general managers. Instead, they basically promoted the guy from their own G League team. Some of their fans right now are not happy with his level of experience. But I think he probably needs a little bit more time before we can fully evaluate how good the GM brand is. But
I think part of the issue is, right, you're still coming into this thing, right? And that's what I'm going to call it. You're coming into this thing. But for the team, for the organization, you kind of have some proven track record, right? You've been doing things for them, and they have an ability to overview those things and see how those things align for what they want, right? And maybe him running the G League team is just a long tail interview, right? They see how he works. They see how he works with the assets they give him. They see how he works with the budget and all these other kind of things. And if he works within the system that they want to establish, then yeah, that's probably your number one guy for now. You go, he does the job the way that we want the job to be done on this smaller scale. So let's see how he does it on the bigger scale.
Yeah. So it's some of the moves he's made. I mean, they traded for Jimmy Butler, then they lost Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. But I think I put a little bit of that on Jimmy Butler, because like I said, Jimmy Butler had his own plan in mind kind of that whole time.
The thing is, I also put some of that on, at that point, we knew who Jimmy Butler was. Mm-hmm. So, but we also know Jimmy Butler to be a very outspoken, he can be very brash, but he can also be a very outspoken and driven leader as well, even if he is a jerk ass. And you look at the way the 76ers play now, and they could use a jerk ass out there. And they could use a guy that is as driven as Jimmy Butler is out there. To go to the opposite end of the spectrum, a guy like JJ Redick, who is useful everywhere he goes, fits very well with the modern NBA. He's a fantastic shooter. Also a guy that the 76ers could use right now, because nobody on that team likes to shoot. So like, it's some of the decisions
Embiid
that
will every once in a while, of all people. Joel Embiid might be the guy that likes to
shoot.
Yeah,
but that's not the guy you want most of the time taking your shots. I'm not saying he shouldn't. Yeah, but you generally want your big man down in the low post to grab the rebounds, right? Well,
at the very least, Ben Simmons not shooting is a big deal for this team. Like, I don't think anybody anticipated that being turning into as much of a thing as it did. I mean, so
I thought it would. I always thought that was.
Let me ask you this. How many three-pointers do you think Ben Simmons has made his entire career with the Philadelphia 76ers over three seasons?
Over three seasons?
DGM guesses three.
Three. How many he's made?
Made. Total.
One.
It's two. Right in the middle of you guys. You
say two.
Over three seasons.
How many DGM might be
thinking of the one he made in preseason where everybody went ape shit because he actually made a three-pointer in preseason. He's taken like the most recent season he took seven. So it's not even that he's not making them. It's just that he's not taking them. So like, nobody thinks he's a threat. As soon as he gets the ball, you can sag off of him because you know he's not going to shoot. And because you know he's completely dangerous doing literally anything else. He's fantastic at everything else. But it's not even that he can't shoot. He just won't. And he just refuses to. And that is just a huge hole. Like, even people who are bad shooters have to take shots every once in a while just to keep everybody honest. But he just has no intention of doing that.
I'm not a basketball GM, but right now, I think the best option for them is obviously you keep Embiid, right? Keep him at center forward. I think as much as Ben Simmons likes to be the guy with the ball, you move him up to a guard. Probably small forward is where I would be more comfortable with the Ben Simmons. And then you work on, I think, getting an established point guard who can bring the ball up court, create space so that Ben Simmons can do things like drive to the basket, catch and shoot, things like that. And then you look for maybe a late tail guy, a kind of a middle guy who can just shoot lights out. Goddamn shooter. Maybe you go back to JJ Redick.
They had JJ Redick. I was just going to say.
They did. Sometimes you got to go backwards. It's all right.
So that's the thing. It's like this point guard that you're talking about, they drafted him. It was Markelle Fultz.
I know.
And and then nobody could figure out why his shot just changed.
Yeah, I think there's some...
And now he's balling out for the Orlando Magic. I mean, he's not quite the same superstar that everybody thought he would be, but you could see him slowly turning back into that, you know, like it might have set him back a couple years with this injury, but he's turning back into the player everybody thought he could be. And And you could see why everybody thought he was the consensus number one overall pick ahead of Lonzo Ball, the best point guard in the draft. When I guess now you, if you were redraft that, you would say that would be De'Aaron Fox, the only good draft pick that the Kings have had in a long time. But yeah, Markelle Fultz was that guy, and them trading up from the third pick to the first pick at that time was seen as like, this is why they did the process, so that they could have enough assets to make a move like that, so that they could go out there and proactively get a guy like Markelle Fultz. So them, whether through mishandling or, you know, or if you were to blame bad scouting or whatever, them missing badly on Markelle Fultz really hurt them. And and then some of their other moves have also hurt. So now they're stuck with Al Horford and Tobias Harris being their complementary stars to Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And both Horford and Harris are making more than $25 million a year. Tobias Harris, my God, that contract is, this past year, he made $32 million, and that's going up to 34 next year. By 2023, he's going to be making $39 million. They have $147 million committed. By the way, the salary cap is like 105 or 106. They're $8.4 million over the luxury tax with just the guys they have on their payroll for next year, which is not a full roster yet. So they're going to have to fill it out with, basically a bunch of duds, bunch of G League guys signed to minimum contracts. They have maybe one. Matisse Thybulle is a promising young talent on a rookie contract. But everybody else is kind of just either a trash player or I guess Josh Richardson is okay as well. But most of the other guys they have are just duds to go along with their studs. And their studs aren't necessarily playing like the studs that they need to be playing. Like, and Ben Simmons, both Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, I think are... Embiid's on his next contract. Ben Simmons' rookie contract is over, so his contract jumps from $8 million to $29 million next year for a guy who refuses to shoot three-pointers. Or for a point guard that refuses to shoot three-pointers, I should say. So, so they got a lot of money committed, and they're, because of the salary cap rules and the luxury tax rules, they're basically hamstrung. Like, they can't go out and sign more people. All they can do is trade the assets that they have, but nobody really wants the assets they have, because it's, I mean, somebody might want Joel Embiid, but somebody might be willing to trade for Ben Simmons, but everybody's gonna balk a little bit at the fact that he won't shoot.
I think the thing is, if you have a team that has shooters already, right, if you have a couple of good shooters, and there are teams who are in the league who overvalued guys who can shoot and have no low post play, Ben Simmons is a guy who complements a team, right? Because he's your low post guy, and as your shooters kind of get kind of more comfortable pushing the ball into the paint, you have a guy who's going to do that, right? You have your danger outs where you can play a little bit more open and create a little bit more space on the court. And then probably Ben Simmons looks like the most amazing ball player ever.
Oh, but God. On a team, guys, huh? I just realized something.
The Warriors are going to trade for Ben Simmons?
Maybe, but I realized that Ben Simmons would actually work on the Pistons. Oh my God. Like, once Blake Griffin's contract ends and he goes into acting full time and he's gone, he would fit right in at that position. Even though Blake's a better shooter than him by miles, the Pistons have some shooters and they're looking to draft a point guard. And oh my God, that would work. Oh God. I don't know if I want that or not.
So that's the thing. It's like there's assets available, yeah, but they all come with questions of like, do we really want this guy, or are we content to just keep drafting or mm-hmm. go and look for some people that might be useful under more reasonable contracts? I mean, because these are good young players still, but I mean, the 76ers are in a tough situation now. They basically, I don't want to say they peaked yet, because Simmons and Embiid still could get better. You know, Simmons could all of a sudden decide to start shooting. They peaked at their peak was losing to the Raptors in 7 games and Kawhi Leonard hitting a game winner on them. That was their peak. This year was just an embarrassing getting kicked out by the Celtics in 4 games. That, you know, but at this point they almost have to consider blowing this up. And if you blow up after going through the entire process, then I think that's an acknowledgement that the process was a failure. So
I think this is where we all make our stand. Go around. Did it work or did it not? Yes or no question. I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say no, because you don't do something like this unless you're going for a championship, and they got far from that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no, because I think the entire premise was flawed and got worse from there.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I will readily admit that I wanted it to fail. So I am happy to say that it failed. I am happy to prematurely say that it failed, if this is premature.
I'm just saying, I just recently bought NBA 2K20 because it was super cheap. I might go into their GM mode and run a process. See how it goes for me.
It's going to take another 5 years, though, to unload all of these assets.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a process of drafting again, just
trade for Devin Booker and be done with it. Don't overthink it.
I think in the meantime they can win some games and at least make some playoff appearances and make themselves look pretty good, right? You know, depending on how far they make it in the playoffs is one thing or another. But I think this is the time where you actually start trying to win and lock down the one or two players you're willing to keep, and then going from there, you build around that. I think that's where you go to the normal basketball operations.
The thing is, if you're doing something this drastic to stockpile talent, it's championship or bust.
Yeah.
And they busted. So that's...
Here's a better question, boys, real quick.
All right.
This is a real quick yes or no. Should the Sixers blow it up?
I would say no.
I don't say a full blow up, but I definitely think you should be open to any offers that come your way.
All right, go to soccer.
All right. Champions League final. I think this happened while we were recording last week, so we missed it. But Bayern Munich beat PSG in the Champions League final 1-0. It was supposed to be like the biggest soccer event of the year, but it was kind of just a very muted thing. Since the tournament was kind of shoved to the end of the year due to COVID. Usually it's supposed to happen like the week after all the regular seasons wrap up for all the big European leagues. But Bayern beat PSG. The big news from the week, schedule wise, next year's Champions League has already started, at least the qualification phases. It's almost like they're not even going to wait for this. They're just going right into the next season. And I think like normally the English Premier League season starts in like right around now. Actually not now, like early August, but I think they're going to wait until mid-September. So, like, even though COVID delayed everything, they're just powering through. They're just going to take a small break, and but then everybody comes back and starts playing again. So I wonder what kind of effect that's going to have on injuries and the rest of the season. But I think the biggest shakeup so far is with the FC Barcelona and the fact that Lionel Messi no longer wants to play for the club. Not only doesn't want to play for the club, but seems to be willing to go full scorched earth to get out of the club. And that is something that I never, ever thought I would see in my lifetime. Partly due to his history with the club. His old club in Argentina, Newell's Old Boys, I think, could no longer afford to pay for the growth hormone treatments because Messi has a growth hormone deficiency. Because they could no longer afford to pay for that, he was basically chopping around, and then Barcelona agreed to do that and pay for that and continue that, and brought him into the club, and he's been there since then. So I think there was a tremendous amount of loyalty. He's won plenty of championships with them, won Champions Leagues with them, and now at the age of 33, he, you know, he's looking at like the future direction of the club, and he's not liking what he sees, and he wants to go somewhere else. I just, with all that history there, I just never thought he would want to leave. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody else really did either. He has a 700 million euro release clause in his contract, which is astronomical. The Neymar's release clause when PSG signed him was 222 million. So we're talking, you know, over three times that much. That's how much Barcelona values him. That's how much they consider him a part of the club, how ingrained he is with the club. It's a massive amount of money. but apparently he has a clause in his contract that allows him to terminate the contract. But apparently that right now what they're arguing over is whether that clause expired in the summer when the normal offseason is, or whether that's active now during the current COVID delayed offseason. So this is looking like it might turn into a legal battle. And once it turns into a legal battle and the lawyers get involved, I don't think there's any coming back from that. There's no patching up this relationship at this point. If he doesn't leave this year, he's going to leave next year when his contract is up, and he's already done the NFL, you know, don't show up to camp thing. He's already done that. Barcelona is already holding their camps for next year, and Messi has not shown up. He is not playing. Even if he's still on the team this year, he is not playing for the team this year, or at least making every signal for that to be the case. So now the question is, where is he going to go? Barcelona isn't necessarily taking bids, but at least all the big kind of names around European soccer, at least all the really rich ones, are throwing their hat in the ring. PSG is one of them.
PSG would be so weird.
So him teaming up with Neymar isn't unusual. They both played at Barcelona together.
It would be him, Neymar, and Mbappe.
Yeah, and so that would be kind of weird, but also just an absolute powerhouse of a team. But there's also financial fair play regulations for European teams where they cannot, where they're limited in how much they can spend. They have to spend at least in proportion to the amount of revenue that they bring in. And that was kind of, that rule was instituted to prevent like a rich billionaire coming in and leveraging a bunch of debt and disrupting kind of the balance of power for basically what Manchester City did. Funnily enough, Manchester City is one of the teams that is kind of in the running for Messi's services. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's also the weird possibility of Juventus coming in, and then we see Messi and Ronaldo on the same team together. That would be especially weird because, you know, those two have been kind of the, you know, if one of them is not the best player in Europe, it's the other one. So having both of those guys teaming up on the same team is going to be kind of weird. But yeah, there are just a lot of different names being, a lot of different teams being thrown around, but it's pretty much just the rich teams, although pretty much every team would want his services, but not all of them can really afford to either pay for the fee that it might cost to get his Barcelona contract terminated and or his what is probably going to be a massive salary to just pay him for his services. But yeah, this kind of moves its way up to the top of the wait and see list because basically whatever team gets Lionel Messi is a favorite for the Champions League mm-hmm. next year and pretty much a shoe-in for winning their own domestic league title. So the balance of power rests on this particular move, unless you get stuck not playing for Barcelona and not being able to play for anybody else next year or this year. So,
and as I always like to say with superstar players in any sport, whether it was with when LeBron was a free agent or when Brady left the Patriots, I always like to say this, you could just retire.
I don't think he's quite there yet. Because like the big reason why he wants, or I mean, he could take a year off at the very least, but I think he's still looking for a challenge because playing for Barcelona is basically not challenging enough for him at this point. He's not happy with the direction of the club right now. They basically got blown out by Bayern Munich 2-8 in their Champions League quarterfinal. So he's looking for a team that he can upgrade to. He's looking to upgrade the talent around him. So I think he's still looking for a challenge and he retired from international soccer. So I think he's looking to, like, when a player does that, I think that's kind of a sign that, they want to prolong their domestic careers by not having to saddle themselves with their international career anymore. So, he always seemed like a guy that was going to play until he was like 40. So I still think he's that kind of player. And he's still talented enough. So I think, we'll either see him not play at all for a year or we'll see him play on another team, but I don't think he's going to retire. Well, that was our show for this week. We're not retiring anytime soon. head on over to sportsoddsandends.com for links to our show notes, links to iTunes, Google Play, or actually not Google Play, but Google Podcasts, other places where you can download this podcast. I'm on Twitter at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. Thank you to all of our current patrons. Thank you for all of you guys for listening to our marathon episodes the last couple of weeks. This is another long one this week. We'll try to cut it down shorter, but But yeah, we've got a lot of interesting stuff going on right now. So tune in next week. We'll see what happens then.